Okay, we're live. Episode 4. Here we are.
I think every episode starts with me giggling.
Probably. It's because I'm really funny, so. No? Okay, cool. Maybe I'll just cut that part out. How are you? What's new? How's life? How's dating? How's coaching? How's matchmaking?
All pretty good.
Excellent.
Yeah, I had some good coaching sessions this week. Matchmaking is going reasonably well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. How are you? What's going on with you?
You didn't answer the third one. How's dating for you? I'm personally fascinated what life must be like to date as a dating coach and as a matchmaker.
Well, I don't think it's much. I don't think it's much different, oddly enough.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I've been dating through this whole process, right, of my whole transition. So for me, the dating came before my transition of careers, I should say. But for me, the dating came before the matchmaking and the date coaching. It's kind of part and parcel, but it's changed over time because I've changed over time. But I don't know that outside of, you know, kind of like a fun topic to talk about, I don't know that it affects my dating so much. Although I've heard other people say it affects them.
Interesting.
Other matchmakers say that it affects their dating.
Other people in the matchmaker crew. It's kind of like it's kind of like being a wizard in Harry Potter. It's like this magical this magical crew that you're a part of. Do you guys have like your own lingo and your own like, when you hang out, do you have like your own terms that you, like matchmaker industry terms that you use?
I don't think
acronyms
so
and
much.
Such and
no, you know, I don't think so. But you know what I find more than not is that it's at the end of the day, regardless of what you do, you're all just people, right? And you're all just functioning at your own level of wherever you're at. So I don't think it matters that you're a matchmaker or that you're not a matchmaker. I think it matters whether you're secure or not. And I don't even mean that like an attachment style sense. I just mean that in general, right? Like if you're a secure person and you're going into something and proud of whatever it is that you do, then you know, it carries that way. But if you are awkward about what you do or awkward because you're a matchmaker or a dating coach, or you don't want to tell people because you think that's going to put them off, you know, I feel like that's more of your own shit than it is about what you do.
So when you're trying to find you a find or catch you a catch, you don't use any of the, like some of the things that I'm sure you use some of the things like we're talking about, for example, or like just when you analyze a potential mate, when you size them up and when you find it, when you find a, try to match yourself with a match.
I do, but I do because it benefits me, not because I'm trying to prove my theories, if you will. Do you know what I'm saying by that? Like the things that I talk about and the advice that I give or the, you know, is because I've had so many experiences of doing it the wrong way that now that I've learned to do it the right way and now that I've had positive reinforcement doing it the right way, that's why I do it that way, not because, you know, I'm setting these rules, you know, that like you're supposed to follow. And there is no, you know, from my standpoint, there are no rules, right? There's no right and wrong. It's how you function and what benefits you and what works for you. So my goal when I'm date coaching specifically is to help people find their own rules for themselves.
I like that. You mentioned doing things the wrong way, which is the whole reason we're here, to redo love. And last time we talked about some of the ways, one of the specific ways to do things the wrong way, the avoidant attachment style. And we touched a little bit on how there are kind of two breakdowns within being in an avoidantly a word. Let's just say it is.
I don't think it is.
there's kind of two subsets of being
avoidant.
Probably not, but I'm going with it. These two subcategories of being an avoidantlyistic, there we go, attached person. Do you want to wrap up that convo about breaking down those two?
So there's the avoidant, who's also who's also known as the dismissive avoidant. And that is the person we mostly talked about last week, who is disconnected from their feelings, who probably grew up with a lot of emotional neglect. And it's not to say that, you know, that their parents were bad, but possibly their parents were avoidant themselves, and their parents maybe had the mindset that, you know, oh, stop crying, you know, enough with these emotions kind of thing. Maybe they, you know, when the baby was crying, they were only comfortable doing so much. Maybe they let them cry a little bit too much, you know, that kind of thing. That's the dismissive avoidant. And the dismissive avoidant tends to have issues with intimacy and issues getting close in a relationship, issues being vulnerable. They tend to really depend on themselves. They tend to be uber independent. They tend to have a lot of casual relationships rather than long-term intimate relationships. They'll only get so close with a partner until they have to pull back, and they find their self-worth in things, in goals, in hobbies. They do not find their self-worth in other people. They also tend to be socially interesting. Like they may have a lot of friends, but they don't necessarily have a lot of very close friends. And they don't have very close personal relationships. I think last week we said they're probably long distance runners, most of them.
Right, of course, every single one. The exercise is only a metaphor for what they're actually running away from emotionally.
Exactly.
The emotional avoidance is manifested in the physicality of the marathon.
There you go.
Maybe we should call it marathon avoidant. Maybe that's the new category.
We're going to get in so much trouble. Then there's the fearful avoidant. The fearful avoidant, also known as disordered, right? And there's actually several names for each of the categories, so it can get very confusing when you're looking online, but we're just going to stick here with fearful avoidant and disordered is one name for the same issue. And the fearful avoidant is someone who has qualities of both the anxious type and the avoidant type. So they got confused when they were young. And this is the smallest portion of the population, somewhere between 3-5% of the population. They more than likely experienced some sort of abuse in childhood, whether it was actual physical abuse or very heavy emotional abuse. The love that they experienced in childhood came with a negative result. So in the case of, you know, a dad beating their kid, the dad, you know, represented love because that's their caretaker, but would also hurt them. So they became fearful of love, even though they wanted love. So when they in relationship, when they get close to somebody because they want love and they want to be in relationship, right, they, you know, will only get so close, and they'll be more warm. They'll be more open. They'll be more, in the beginning, especially, they'll kind of, you know, ask for it, and want it. But then when they get there, they push away, and then they get really like uncomfortable with it when it gets close, because they are literally afraid of it. So yeah. And they tend to be the most distrusting of all the attachment styles, because again, the like love came with a lot of fear. And they're quite disorganized. They have major emotional dysregulation, and they tend to hold things in and kind of build a case against their partner, kind of like constantly like watching what they're doing, and then eventually like blow up in some big way and let their emotions out. So this one girl that I'm friendly with, who is fearful avoidant, said to me, I feel like a ticking time bomb. And I said, that's literally the definition of fearful avoidant, where you hold things in, and then explode.
You mentioned, also, go ahead. And they're also,
I was just going to say, they're also have issues being vulnerable.
Okay. Something you just said stuck out to me that I think is interesting. You mentioned a term, emotional dysregulation, in this attachment style. What is that all about?
Well, it's not only in this attachment style. Emotional dysregulation is when your emotions are not regulated in general, right? So it's anybody whose emotions aren't regulated, including anxious, feel that a lot. Probably, I would guess avoidants don't get it as much, but it's anytime you don't have your emotions under control, basically. Does that make sense?
So that's kind of just, okay. Yeah. I thought there was going to be more to elaborate on that, but it basically is just kind of self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. All right. Delb.
Cool.
Now
so, we were going to talk about secure, and then move how like the different attachment styles can move towards security.
Yeah.
I also want to say, and I think we touched on this last week, but I think it's important to say that attachment styles, while everybody has like a primary attachment style that they kind of come up with, that it is on a spectrum. And so most people at any given time are not one attachment style, right? Like, and there was probably a time that I was 100% anxious, you know? but at this point, I think I've definitely moved along the spectrum, and I'm, you know, in doing some different like quizzes online and tests, I know that I've moved a lot more towards security, but with still some portion of anxious as well. And depending on who you're in relationship with and in what area of your life, you can also be anxious in one space, secure in another, maybe avoidant in a different one. So I don't, firstly, I think it's important to let people know that they can move along the spectrum. And secondly, it's important to know that it's also dependent on who you're in relationship with. So I think that that's a really important point, you know, like who is or isn't activating your attachment styles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other part of that is really important is that, you know, you are the people that you surround yourself with. So watch who you're surrounding yourself with. You know, you kind of have control over, you at least have control over that to some degree. So I think that there's, you know, there's a lot of agency in this, you know, when in recognizing all of this, there's a lot of agency in it. So take it, man.
I think that's a great way to set it up, and that it's a spectrum, and that there is some fluidity in this, and that even if you take a test one time, and you identify a certain way or like a certain attachment style, feels like it describes how you are. That might only be for your current relationship. That might not be for every relationship you've been in the past or what you will be in the future.
Right.
And it can change from person to person, and it can change with your own self-development. So, as we've been doing this, I've even recognized that sometimes I feel like some of the secure questions, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm like that. And then some of the avoidant ones, sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, sometimes I'm like that. So I think that's a brilliant setup for getting into today's topic of secure attachment, the ideal form of attachment, and how just because you identify as some kind of anxious or one of those types of avoidantisticism. I think that's the word, avoidantisticism.
Speaking of sticking to one moniker, okay.
It's possible to change, and it's possible to get to a point where, you know, you're giving your partner exactly what they need, and you're asking for exactly what you need, and doing it in a way that is beneficial and healthy for everyone. So I think it's a great way to put it that, people can change.
People can totally change. It's just hard to change when you don't know what's running the show. And that, I think, has been the biggest opening for me with this, personally, that now that I understand what has been going on, and it goes so much further beyond just the attachment style. But that was kind of like the opening doorway for me personally. You can now adjust it, right? Like, you can't change something if you don't know that it's a problem. If you don't know what the problem is, and when you know what the problem is, you can take steps to adjust. So all of this culminates in basically the secure, well, it doesn't culminate in the secure attachment style, but the last attachment style that we haven't really properly covered is the secure attachment style. And the goal is not only for everybody to date or have a relationship with a secure person, because they help to regulate all the other attachment styles, but it's also to move towards being secure on the spectrum. So we're going to talk about as much of that as we can right now.
Yes, secure attachment. There's quite a lot to talk about with this one, especially because this will be different than the other three that we've touched on, because this one is the most active of the two, in that it's potentially a goal, somewhere to arrive at. So this isn't just a way to identify as an attachment style. This is potentially a goal, something to aspire to. So we'll talk about what it is, how to identify it, but also like how to get there, right?
Yeah.
So should we start with what it is? Should we start with the questions like we did for the other ones?
We can start with those. I also just want to say what's important is that the good news is that 50 to 60% of the population is secure. So most people walking around are secure. So it's good news for the rest
Thank
of us
God.
Messes. yeah. So
all right, let's go through some of these questions. I feel like here's the interesting thing. As I was writing these down, I remember thinking like, These are kind of boring, but in a good way. They're very undramatic, right? And that's kind of how it's supposed to be.
Well, what's funny about you saying that is that one of the hardest things for the anxious attachment style to do is to like or feel, have feelings for a securely attached person, because they don't ignite the same amount of chemistry and or chaos in the anxious person's nervous system. So they don't even recognize a secure person as like a person of interest usually. And it's really hard for the anxious person to recognize secure attachment as chemistry, as love, as like a romantic interest. And that's one of the big, actually in moving towards secure from anxious, that's one of the big hurdles to jump.
I am really looking forward to talking about that hurdle and how the fuck to jump over it. Okay, so yeah, in fact, that's one of the, that was one of the questions in the assessment here. I'll start with that one. It says, sometimes people see me as boring because I create little drama in relationships.
That's funny.
Yeah. Here's a few of the other ones. I find it easy to be affectionate with my partner. Fine. I feel comfortable depending on romantic partners. Okay.
Right.
And I noticed like with a lot of these, we're not going to have a lot of commentary like we have for the other ones we've talked about, because it's just kind of like, oh yeah, great. Good for you. You're normal. Congratulations. Yeah. Check the box. Great.
I think what's important to say in that is that in general, when the secure person was young, they were commended for expressing their feelings. They were invited to express their feelings. When they expressed their feelings, their parents responded first of all, and second of all, responded in a healthy manner that helped them to resolve their feelings. They, you know, coddled them when they needed coddling. They, you know, let them know that they'd be there for them. And this done over and over and over created a safe environment where they felt like it was okay to have feelings. It was okay then to have boundaries. And that created a sense of self-esteem that allowed them to take that into their adult relationships. And that's why they're so goddamn normal.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, let's go through a few more of these. I am generally satisfied with my romantic relationships. Congratulations. I don't feel the need to act out much in my romantic relationships. I have little difficulty. This kind of is what you were just touching on here. I have little difficulty expressing my needs and wants to my partner. I believe most people are essentially honest and dependable.
They have a positive.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say that they have a positive view of people in general. They have a positive view of themselves, and in turn, they have a positive view of people in the world. Whereas, for example, like a fearful avoidant will be very distrusting of people in general. An avoidant, a dismissive avoidant, doesn't need people at all, you know, like I can just live without you. It's fine. And anxious people feel like just people will constantly like leave or abandon them, you know, at their core.
Yeah. Interesting how a lot of this starts with how you view yourself, how you value yourself, what your own self-worth is, and how you project that onto other people and especially your partner. Next, I'm comfortable sharing my personal thoughts and feelings with my partner. An argument with my partner doesn't usually cause me to question our entire relationship. Pause here for this one.
So can you speak on this a little?
In my last relationship, which we've discussed, I feel... listening back to episode 3, I was like, wow, we've discussed this in depth. Am I doing this podcast for my own personal therapy? I wondered.
You're just trying to get coaching sessions for free.
Oh, yeah. Hey, if anyone out there wants to get free coaching from Flora, just do a podcast with her. And you can talk about all your shit and she'll analyze it and it'll be free. Damn, I shouldn't have let my secret out. Anyway, so in my last relationship, we a few times when we got into disagreements, she would do this. She would question our entire relationship, and I was like, "Is that the appropriate response to what we're talking about here? Like, questioning our entire relationship, questioning our compatibility was a word that was used a lot." And I was just like, man.
So she did this, not you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Like, the more you talk about it, the more I think she's fearful avoidant. Because fearful avoidant goes both anxious and...
I think you're right.
Avoidant, and the, from what you, that like little statement right there would be more of an anxious response.
Right.
Yeah. And it's almost like, yeah, I guess we can all have qualities either way, but I was going to say, it's almost like she made you feel anxious.
Definitely. Yeah. That's why, you know, in the beginning, I found it so fascinating that your attachment style can sometimes fluctuate depending on your significant other. And yes, I feel like in that relationship, my anxiousness was definitely highlighted. And I do feel like my anxiety was definitely brought out more in that relationship than I think it will be, you know, in the future.
So I think what's important to say here is that for all the insecure attachment styles, being in a relationship with a secure person is actually healing and can help to transform their own attachment styles, because it creates a sense, the secure person naturally creates a sense of safety generally, for which the insecure attachment style can then feel safe and relax the extremes of their attachment style. And when you do that, if you're in a long-term relationship, when you do that repeatedly, right, when you're in a repeated safe situation with a secure person, where you're safe expressing your feelings, where you're safe expressing your needs, where you're literally building new neurons in your brain that mm-hmm. are moving you towards becoming more secure. Now, you'll always have some essence of your original primary attachment style, but it can really make a difference just being in a relationship with a secure person or being in a secure relationship.
Yeah, that's interesting. I saw something that, you know, speaking of moving toward that and, you know, kind of being okay with it being boring or at least non-dramatic. I came across something about how to navigate that, and then we can get into like how to transition from, you know, one of the anxious or avoidant attachment styles into secure. And when you're with a secure person, when you're not used to being in a healthy relationship, there may be an urge to provoke rejection. Because you're kind of in a way expecting it, right? Like you have to learn how to give up your defenses. You have to in a way sweat it out with this healthy relationship bond, instead of kind of having this expectation that something eventually is going to get fucked up, or, you know, eventually the other shoe is going to drop, or the sky is going to fall, and you subconsciously manipulate things to mess it up. And so the only way that you'll grow is to learn to accept that real love and that closeness, to be able to emerge as an independent person who's more honest and less defensive and capable of forming these new types of relationships that are satisfying and healthy.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. And I think that what the problem is in general is that your nervous system is used to a certain type of idea of what love is, depending on how you grew up. So when you grew up anxiously attached, you're used to that inconsistency. So literally, it's not even your brain. It has nothing to do with your cognitive brain that wants healthy love and wants a long-term partner and, you know, wants all the things. Your body is used to the inconsistency. So you think falling in love is about the person being there and then the person going away, and then the person being there and then the person like going away for some period of time. And you seek that out, but that, and it's the same, sorry, it's the same for like a fearful avoidant. That's why they tend to get into relationship. Like maybe they were abused as kids, but then they will go into adult abusive relationships because that was all they knew of love. And that's how they understood it. Right.
Right.
And being with a secure person is foreign. It doesn't ignite those familiar feelings, and you just literally don't feel excited or interested in a secure person. You know, so maybe you end up as friends with that person, or maybe you end up just not even being interested, you know? But to go back to
you're interested in the drama, you're interested in the chaos,
but not
that's
your,
what you grew up with.
Not your brain. Yeah. That's the thing that's like the most difficult part about it is your brain is not. In your brain, you're saying, why is this happening? Like, I don't want to be in this. This is not what I want. But your subconscious, your body, your nervous system, your right brain is completely addicted to that chaos. And so until you switch your belief system, your internal belief system, it's not really going to, things won't really change, even though, you know, because I knew about this anxious attachment stuff for a long time, but I was still making the same mistakes. You know, I was still going for the unavailable people, you know, until I was able to make a real shift in my subconscious, belief system.
So how do you make that shift? How do you do it?
Well, I think it's different for different people, and there's like a ton of different methods to go about it. For me, it was meditating, but it wasn't just meditating. It was meditating with like a specific focus on this stuff.
Okay.
Journaling is a really big one. And you know, and then there's a lot of other techniques. There is EMDR, there's NLP, there is, anything that slightly takes you out of your conscious brain, your left brain, your thinking brain, your cognitive brain, and puts you into your body. And at the same time, specifically for anxious attachment, it's very related to like inner child issues, which we can talk more about. But it's a lot of kind of focusing on inner child work. So I think ultimately that in moving towards secure, there's a lot of inner work that needs to be done before you can really move towards secure. Because we can sit here and we can talk about moving towards secure and what it looks like on the outside. But if you haven't really done the inner work on the inside, you'll always fall back into the same kinds of old habits and old behaviors. And again, you won't even be able to recognize a secure person as like a romantic interest, probably.
Yeah.
So anyway, to get back to something you were saying earlier, in, you know, constantly trying to ruin a relationship. One thing I can say about my marriage was that from day one, as an anxiously attached, you know, person, from day one, I was threatening divorce.
That sounds healthy.
Like there was, There was never an argument that we had that didn't end in like, well, fuck it, let's just get divorced then, you know?
Interesting. So yeah, the thing that I would, one of the questions in the assessment here about questioning an argument with my partner doesn't usually cause me to question our entire relationship. You were questioning, right, or at least threatening, or both, the entire relationship from day one.
Well, I think, you know, what anxious people tend to do is to test their partners, right? So in recreating the abandonment experiences or the fear of abandonment, they're kind of always sort of ready for it, you know? So again, like every argument we had was, well, fuck it, let's just get divorced. You know, yeah, fuck you. I don't really need you. And then you want the partner to come back and say, no, baby, I love you. I love you. I love you. I could never live without you. I don't want to be without you, you know? But the reality is that you are just kind of hedging your bets of abandonment. And in some ways, and even trying to recreate it, because when the partner turns around and says, okay, fine, let's get a divorce, you know, you're like, you see, everybody leaves me.
Mm.
You're just proving your childhood wounds.
Prophecy.
That's right.
Mm. All right. Should we wrap up the rest of these assessment questions here? And then we're going to have to wrap up for the evening. So then wrapping up the questions.
Please.
wrapping up the questions here. When I disagree with someone, I feel comfortable expressing my opinions. And then there's a few more here. If I notice that someone I'm interested in is checking out other people, I don't let it faze me. I might feel a pang of jealousy, but it's fleeting. If someone I've been dating begins to act cold and distant, I may wonder what's happened, but I'll know it's probably not about me.
That's a big one, I think.
Agreed. Yeah, I've got some experience here. What do you think?
Well, tell us about your experience.
I think I'm the type of person who's naturally inclined to think that everything is about me, not in a vain way, but in a way that, like, if something goes wrong, I'll assume fault and I will take responsibility and blame myself. So if someone does act cold and distant, I'll think that it was probably something that I did.
Right. That's a very typical, like, anxious, a way an anxious person will show up. But it's also, in addition to that, it's about creating a story, right? It's like projecting and putting a story on it. It's not like, oh, he must be having a bad day, you know, that's why he's not calling me today or whatever. It's more like, oh, he's not calling me because now suddenly he's not interested and he's going to leave me, you know? And there's a lot of projection and there's a lot of, like, making up story and living in the story, and that rumination that we talked about with anxious people, that they are, like, constantly, like, thinking about what's wrong and, you know, so there's a lot of projection of that onto the secure, well, you know, potentially secure partner or their partner in general.
Yeah. All right, two more here. If someone I've been dating for a few months says they want to break up, I'd feel hurt at first, but I'd get over it. And lastly,
I have a friend who broke up with somebody after a year and a half. Okay, you tell me what she is. he broke up with her. They were living together. They were in a very serious relationship, met each other's families, the whole, you know, the whole thing. And he called her up one day and he's like, I can't do that. Or he left the house one day. He's like, I need to go. I'll be back in a week. I don't know. I need some time. And she was like, okay. And she gave him space. She didn't speak to him for a week. No questions asked kind of thing. And then he called her a week later and he said, I can't do this anymore. I'm sending somebody to like pick up my stuff and like get my furniture and I'm out. And she was like, okay. And then she went to Spain for a month and did yoga for a month and lived out the rest of her, you know, just kind of dealt with the whole pain of the situation on her own. And you know, she's clearly secure, right? Because she kind of accepted the rejection and she accepted the end of the relationship with the knowing that if he didn't want to be there, there was nothing she could say or do to force him or convince him to be there. Right. And, you know, that she just had to like take her space and move on. For me as an anxious person, like listening to that story, especially at the time, I was like, I don't understand. Wait a second. You didn't call him 500 times to understand like what the fuck happened. You didn't see him 18 times to like, you know, get the full story. Like, you don't know if he's seeing somebody else. I don't get it. She's like, no, I deleted him on all social media. You know, like I blocked him, deleted the whole thing. She's like, I never like asked a question. I was just like, I don't understand, you know, but,
what is wrong with you? Don't you want to get to the bottom of this?
But that's, you know, that's a very typically anxious response, right?
Good for her. That's great. That sounds super healthy. And last one is, I won't have much of a problem staying in touch with my ex. Strictly platonic. After all, we have a lot in common.
I think after a time, I think that for anybody, usually like a break is needed before a friendship can reemerge, you know?
Yeah. Or you just have kids together and then you're forced to get along.
Not me. I play by my own rules.
All right. Well, man, that went by fast. This was a fun episode. I like a lot of things that we were talking about today. I think I'm excited to talk more about this, this healthy approach and mindset to relationships and dating. And, We spent today sort of mostly identifying the secure attachment style. And I think next week, among other things, of course, but we can start to define how, like we can start to lay out the process. So if you are one of the other three attachment styles, how do you go from one of those to secure? Called a teaser. Yeah. That's a cliffhanger. Showbiz, baby. So
what did I call you? The entertainment creative extraordinaire.
So
thank God I have Aaron here. He knows his stuff.
Oh man. I don't know about that. Anything else you want to wrap up with for today?
Yeah, just go find a secure person to date.
Pretty much, right? Yeah.
That's it.
That's it. That'll solve all your problems.
And listen, all you secure people, don't date each other, okay? Because we all need you.
Yeah. Yeah. Save some for us. All right. Let's sign off. Flora, it's been a pleasure. It's been a delight. And we'll be back again in another couple weeks on The Love Redo.
The Love Redo podcast.
Where we redo love.
Yes.
Subscribe.
Yes, you got it.
Like.
Finally.
Review.
Yes.
Share.
Exactly. Do all that.
Evangelize.
Yes. Bye, guys.